Hi, I'm Jane Hung, and this is Mending Lives, where I'm talking with people from a patchwork of places. Some have had their lives ripped apart by loss, some are in the business of repairing others' brokenness, but we're all seeking to make this world more beautiful. Asma Torkham is a Pakistani psychologist based in Islamabad. She's worked for over 10 years with national and international child and women-centred NGOs. Since 2020, she's been a volunteer team member of the British Health Psychology Society and an active member of the South Asian Members UK Psychology Network. I was drawn to her by her passionate dedication to counselling victims of sexual violence, as well as her work on the mental health of the police force. We had a wide-ranging discussion on subjects such as child marriage, femicide, and gender equality, as well as men's attitudes and behaviour towards women. I believe the world needs more young women like Asma. She is outspoken, dedicated, and selfless in her pursuit of improving the rights of women less educated than herself. Enjoy listening. So, Asma, you've been up since 4 a.m.? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, I am up. Yes.
Because it's Ramadan and you have to eat before sunrise and after sunset. And during the day, you cannot drink or eat anything, right?
Yes, that's perfect. Because it's the beauty of Ramadan. I mean, we do this for the purity of our inner soul. So it is beautiful that we know even right now I'm sitting in Elon, no one can see me. Even I can drink a single drop of water, but I'm not doing this. This perfect.
Yes. So self-control and a chance for contemplation, for reflection. In the past, have you had any insights after completing Ramadan?
Yes, last time, John, that's a great question. I was sick because I was taking medication. And it was really tough for me to go through with that 13 hours fasting, but which gave me the energy because I thought that is for my inner self and self-control, as you just said. So I can do it. So that was really hard part, but, you know, that gave me courage. I can control myself. My behavior and my life. So God can help me. I think it's all related to your brain, how you think you can do it. If you think that you can do it, I think brain and even the environmental energy supports you in your positive mindset. So I was missing that how tough it was the last Ramadan. And comparatively, it's really an easygoing Ramadan this time because I'm physically 80% fit, and I can control myself better than that last year.
Getting older, more control. Anyway, yes. You're a Pakistani psychologist who's devoted much of your life to issues of sexual harassment, gender-based violence, and gender equality. And it seems it all began with a bachelor and master degree in health psychology. So what strands of the degrees that you studied led you to focus on these topics rather than others within mental health?
Thank you, Jen. It's really a wonderful question. First of all, I'm really thankful for having me on this show, a wonderful podcast, Mending Lives. And thank you for being my friend. It is interesting and amazing that how we became friends.
We've become friends, haven't we? So, you know, with the preparation for this, I feel very close to you and I'm delighted to be talking face to face now.
Yes, that's wonderful. It will remain a golden part of my life till my last breath. Yes.
Let's hope it changes to diamond. Yes. But anyway, yes, you and health psychology.
Yes.
You know, why focus on rather than other issues in mental health? Was there anything in your childhood or within your society that motivated you, for example?
Yes, Jane, I was born into a traditional lower middle class family of South Punjab, especially the Rahimir Khan, a vulnerable district where education facilities are limited Infrastructure-wise, this area is poor. In our society, being a girl was undervalued, a sentiment that persists still today. So in a patriarchal society, no one wants girls. On my birth as a fourth, again a daughter, out of seven siblings, it was really toughest part of my mother's life to face people around her. The family I was raised in upheld strict traditions. There is no permission for girls to go to study for school or university. With limited decision making, women had no right to take the
So
decision
wait a
of their.
minute. So women are blamed for the sex of their child. Is that in Pakistan?
Yeah, unfortunately, it
Okay.
is. If there are girls, multiple girls, what science says is none of their concerns. They say, why woman had, gave birth to the girls, right? Let me tell you, the joint family structure imposed numerous societal pressures on women. Then I witnessed the child marriage of my elder sister. She was just 13, with the double age of her, man older than her. So child marriage of my elder sister fueled my determination to challenge these norms. Until the age of 15, I was interested to study Urdu literature rather than psychology. But a tragic incident in my neighborhood altered my trajectory. A neighbor threw acid on his wife, suspecting of her adultery, which ultimately led her to death. So that woman often, I had chit chat with that woman who frequently visited my mother. So similarly, another girl in my neighborhood village was murdered for refusing to marry a man much older than her. So these disturbing incidents, coupled with my avid reading of stories and novels since childhood, deeply imprinted on my memory, unable to find satisfactory answers of my lot of many questions, that why this woman, girls, why? So I became increasingly curious about human behavior. I wanted to understand the motivation behind such acts of violence, that how one can murder a human being like themselves. So I observe everything is associated with childhood behavior, and curiosity ultimately compelled me to opt psychology as my
So,
major.
Asma, you're now late 30s, you're single, you're highly educated,
Yes.
you have such a busy life, given all the things you do, not just as program manager, but also as a program officer, as a social and health psychologist, as a legal promoter, and even a co-founder of an organization. So some of your work has been providing psychosocial support to over 5,000 women and girls who suffered sexual violence or harassment in floods. There was one in 2010, 2014, and most recently 2022. I have spent a lot of my time trying to raise awareness about sexual violence, femicide in Lebanon, and alas, some of those problems that you've just revealed are evident in Lebanon as well, punishing women, child marriage. But it seems to me that there's a lot of shame as well around with families to speak out. So in Pakistan, how can you encourage women to tell more? Because that's where I believe change can begin, if people really know the facts, just like you've recounted. How can we encourage women to speak out and be like you? You know, this is enough, right? My neighbor was murdered. You know, my sister was married at the age of 13 to an old man. You're very brave what you do. I mean, but how can we make more of you in Pakistan?
Thank you. It's really important question because this is what I'm trying to do to make a difference for being my presence. Well, cultural factors significantly contribute to rape and sexual violence in Pakistan. individual difference from reporting these cases due to fear of societal stigma and concerns of dishonoring and acceptance by the society. Similarly, as I mentioned, that patriarchal mindset where men hold more power, you mentioned as in Lebanon, leaving women vulnerable, and then gender inequality, which create disparities, which perpetuate unequal power dynamics, then honor and culture, then victim blaming, and then weak legal enforcement and lack of awareness. So all these problems stems from not having the education. Pakistan has more than 50% of its population consisting of women. And most of them are living in rural areas. So where facilities, even if we talk about my city, where I'm right now sitting, I have to change two buses to reach out to my town. So we are living in 21st century, it's 2024, but still we don't have bus stop in my area. So what I'm trying to say, how we can produce more Asma Turkham or more brave women is the only way to get them educated, to give them at least their share religion has given them. You talk about Lebanon. Lebanon is a Muslim majority country. I'm talking about Pakistan. It's a Muslim majority country. But unfortunately, the mindset, the uneducated mindset claim that it's all, this is what Islam says, that Islam barren women to get education. This is totally nonsense. It's not relevant to Islam. There is nothing to do with Islam. This is actually their power dynamics where men just want to hold power. So how we can make women powerful by giving them education? And let me tell you that you mentioned the figures that I have more than 5,000 women to whom I have provided counseling. So only two things are each time any victim of rape or harassment used to visit me. I tell them that, please, number one, you have to make sure to get education. I am here to support you. I mean, you can start non-formal education, online education. Education is the only way which give you the power and strength to foresee the problems around you. And then make yourself financially independent. Because financial independence is the actual strength, is the actual power. If you are financially independent, then you can hold the decision of your life. So two things. First, get them educated, then let them be financially independent. These are the two things. Through that podcast, I'm giving message to everyone, especially to women who are listening our podcast, that please let, it's not late. If you're 40, 50, 60, let's just get educated and make yourself financially independent. And then please challenge these norms. Let me share. Please challenge these norms. There is nothing to do with Islam or any religion. No religion barren any human being from getting their at least basic human rights. That's the way.
And these days, with the availability of free information on the internet, there is an opportunity, isn't there? I mean, you don't necessarily have to pay to be educated. Of course, you need Wi-Fi. That might be an issue in Pakistani villages. But yeah, education, language ability to communicate, to write well, and yeah, financial independence. But I imagine it's a tall order for many, but you have to start somewhere. Don't you? I mean, and as I say, with the internet and all this digital new world, there are lots of opportunities, even on your phone, right? You can find out and learn so much. I suppose you've talked with rape survivors in with the flood. I suppose you have the same message for the women who are victims of domestic abuse and violence. But tell me, what is SDG 5 gender equality? And what's your message about that? You spoke at a conference in 2022. You were a speaker. It was an international conference and it was held on International Women's Day.
Yes.
What is that?
You see, in 2015, if I'm not wrong, nations have sat together and decided that how we can make lives better of the world. So they have chosen 17 sustainable development goals. So I opted to advocate or to work for four SDGs, like SDG 3, health and wellness, because I'm a psychologist. So my focus, my degree is relevant to this. And then SDG 5 is about gender equality, and then SDG environment, or and SDG 16 for peace and tolerance. And SDG 5 is about sustainable development goal 5, number focus on achieving gender equality
In
and
United
improve.
Nations, or
Yes, in
I understand.
every country who is signatory of different territories with United Nations are bound to make sure that these sustainable development goals by the end of 2030 and 2050 must be, applicable. And the SDGs have certain points how they can go, the governments can achieve these sustainable development goals.
I got
So
it.
you are asking me that sustainable development goals number 5, it focus on achieving gender equality and empowerment, empowering all women and girls. It aim to end discrimination, violence, and harmful practices against women and girls, and ensure equal opportunities and leadership and decision making, and provide access to reproductive rights and healthcare. So achieving gender sustainable development goals number 5 is crucial for promoting inclusive and sustainable development worldwide. So my message in that the gender equality seminar was that to raise awareness, inspire people, not only women but men, because men, unless men are not accepting those decisions or words, so there is gonna be no change. So to raise awareness, to inspire men and people around us so that they can take action and mobilize stakeholders to accelerate progress toward achieving Sustainable Development Goals 5. And by doing so, I just wanted to create a more equitable and inclusive world for all, not for women, but for men. Because unless the mindset of men are not going to be changed, no change can occur. So my aim is to cultivate and trim the mindset of boys, especially in men, because I have observed that older men are quite, lazy to accept the change, but the youth are the catalyst of change. So I believe that one day the change will occur eventually. So that's why my focus remain in that time on boys.
I believe that profoundly too, that youth are the catalyst for change. And you know about my Becky's Button project
Yes.
in Lebanon. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for volunteering to join our team, right? We want to go worldwide and we want to spread the messages of raise awareness about sexual. But one thing for 2024 is that we've said we're focusing on men. Why? Because, they're the perpetrators, and actually, and they have so much power. And I want to engage in some kind of dialogue with them, just to say, hey, imagine if Becky, my daughter, imagine if she'd been your daughter or your sister or your wife, how would you feel? Just to kind of ideally get some emotional reaction to make men think, and then encourage them to take care of the women around them, that they love, their family members, their relatives, and even in their community, right? If they see some woman in distress, why not go over and see what's going on and help? Don't be a bystander. It's a tall order to change men's attitudes and behavior. The more I look into this, the more I understand why basically all those reports and statements and plans, that it's very rare that they come to fruition I mean, for example, the United Nations would they were talking about have you heard about Orange the World? You know,
Yes, I've been
and
the.
you know, oh, stamp out all femicide by 2030. Well, really? I mean, the numbers have just continue to go up. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk to men in our communities and ask them to reconsider their entrenched beliefs about women. What do you think?
Thank you, Jane. There are a lot of many answers and buts and ifs, but what you said, I'm doing already because I believe where I raised in the area very patriarchal, the decision only can be taken by men. And even if I can go out, I am a 30-year-old girl, but I have to keep 2-year-old boy with me because he will protect me on the street. I mean, what nonsense? What kind of the mindset is this? So I observe that instilling respect for women begins at home, where mothers play a vital role during my sessions with women, mothers and girls in rural village. I emphasize the importance of teaching their sons to respect their daughters, not to respect, teach their daughters to respect and how to sit and stand in the society. So I emphasize during my sessions with that woman, please understand that it's 2024. You have to teach your boys, your sons, your men to take, respect women. I mean, give them the same responsibility you are giving to your daughters, to the girls, and also burden your sons that all the honors of the family is on your shoulder, not on the shoulder of girls. So you pointed out very important question. Note. You highlighted very important point. So this is where I'm already working. And I believe that education and awareness are key components of this initiative I have taken. Additionally, I conducted sessions with boys in schools and colleges to address and improve their attitude towards gender equality. And mentioned previously, if you go through my social media account, you have seen that even on International Women's Day, I was talking with boys. I mean, I was talking with men because. I mentioned that while I was growing up, I've seen the decision. So what we are more than in numbers, women are more than in numbers, but they're very less than in decision powers. So that's why, unlike other organization or other peoples, I only opted to talk with boys and men. So whatever United Nations says, it's still a long way to go, but I think we can be the first drop of the rain. But since childhood, my focus remains the men. I only work with men. I mean, it's not like that I'm not working with women or girls, but my focus is that all power belongs to men in our
So
society.
I
So,
notice that on your Facebook pages, for example,
yes.
often you are standing beside men. I see you talking to 100 police officers about mental health. You do a lot of work with men, right?
Yes, because I consider that all powers are in their heads. So I talk to community villagers, women, religious leaders that please taught your sons how to take responsibility of their behaviors, not teach your daughters that all honors belong to them. I mean, it's not a way that each bad things all always associated with women. Please get them take their responsibility. So my standing from day one is that please rehabilitate mindset or restructure the mindset of boys and youngsters, not the girls.
I would agree. It all begins at childhood. It's us women that produce boys. And as a mother, we can do a lot to teach our boys to respect not just us, but the women around them. And to have a very good connection with your mother, I believe, would help eliminate many problems related to men becoming violent against women. What do you think?
I totally agree, thousand times, Jane, because I believe instilling respect for women begins at home, where mothers play a vital role. During my sessions with men, mothers and rural village, I emphasize the importance of teaching their sons to respect their daughters and treat them equally. By fostering this mindset from childhood, we can create a society and culture of respect for women within Pakistani society, within around the world. So I think change begins at their home from childhood. So it's important.
Hey, I notice you live on Jail Road. Is there a prison there?
It's really interesting question. So Jail Road in Lahore is a very famous place where lot of many university and colleges are occur. So you may say it's a prime area. Well, though I never visited that jail, but let me share you. In 2015, I get a consultancy from a PhD student. She wanted to work on homicides to see the hidden reasons or motives that why men or women murdered their blood relations. So Jail Road doesn't mean that I went to that jail, but I have visited other jails and find out the reasons of homicides behavior.
So, have you actually worked with a man who's killed a woman, offered psychological help? Is that part of your service?
Not that they come to me for taking counseling. Sorry to say, it's really pathetic to mentioning that in our society, where if someone talk about mental health issues, they consider that they are insane, then they have to be admitted in the mental health rehab center. It's not like that. But yeah, as I mentioned just before that question, that I went to jails, it was a consultancy. So I have worked with those homicides men. So it was really tough. Some were even not accepting their mistake, but most of them were repenting on their sin that, oh, it was, I mean, heat of the moment that we blame them of adultery, mostly blame. I mean, they never say that we have committed the sin of adultery, but they always blame the woman. So I work with them.
Very good. Well, in Lebanon, 80% of femicide cases are domestic and some, argument between a wife. And I have done a little research. It seems in Pakistan it's fairly similar. I know that you've been working with police about what they can do to counter gender-based domestic violence, right? You've recently conducted a session. How did that go?
Yeah, let me tell you a story. My maternal grandmother in 2010 gifted me a small part of land. Before changing the ownership, it was under the cultivation of her nephew. When I went there to take control of that land, he started threatening me, and there were heat of some bad words. So I went to police stations to take justice, and it was really pathetic to go on. And then I went to consult assistant commissioner, deputy commissioner, and lot of many, I mean, all institution I went. It took me 15 years to file my first investigation police report. In 2010, I was just only 20 years old. And in 12th of Feb 2024, when my FIR would get registered, I turned 35. So it's really pathetic and hard to mention that it took me. I consider myself educated and somehow empowered woman. So this gave me an idea that that what about those women who are less educated, consisting 50% and half of the population of Pakistan. We are 220 plus million population, and you may say 110 or 20 million are the women. And what they're gonna do with that behavior? I am educated, I have knowledge of law, I'm working with those institutions. It took me 15 years. So I decided, and I talked to regional police officer where I was went on 7th February 2024, that I filed the complaint, and he was hearing my complaint. He said, okay, what we can do to solve your matter, because you complained to Inspector General of Punjab, the provincial head of police. I said, oh, I'm going to take my complaint back unless you allowing me to held as a mental health and emotional well-being session. And
Fantastic. Well done.
He said, why? You think we are insane? And I said, I didn't say like that. It took me 15 years to file my FIR. So why not to brainstorm and have a discourse with police that how and why gender sensitive behavior are important at our police stations. So after a little bit of discussion, he agreed. And this is how I went to police station. So I think it's really important to work with the behavior of police, because police are the first hand supporter of any case of violence or rape or harassment.
Yep. So they're taking the statements. All right. I know in Lebanon, some women were telling me that even that is awful, because these events usually happen at night. And if they go to the police station, the guys are in pajamas and sleeping and very annoyed to be woken up. And I can't imagine, but that is the reality. And you're telling me that in Pakistan, it's so difficult for women. But anyway, what were your core messages, and were they listening? What responses did you get?
Well, you know, change never occurs so at one instance. It only is a bang which create first. So change is a gradual process, right?
Yes.
It takes time. It's not first time that I was working with police. Before that, when I was working with Bedari organization, Volunteer International or UNICEF or a lot of many organizations, we work with police. So it's tough, for instance, for them, because they are all male, and their patriarchal mindset and their traditions never allow them. I mean, let me tell you, when I was just 22, I went to police station. The police officer was gazing at me, and he was very uncomfortable that that little girl, just 22-year-old, coming us to teaching us how to behave in police stations, how they can be a gender sensitized while reporting or filing an FIR of a woman, especially because in rape cases here in Pakistan, mostly their negative attitude and policing system is so corrupt that major evidences of rape cases are, tempered. They are wasted, because if a girl is complaining rape, so medical legal should be within 24 hours. The delaying tactics results in damaging, their claims that they have been raped. So police are, in many cases, become the perpetrator and supporter. So I think that's how.
So difficult. Anyway, alas, we're getting towards the end of this conversation. And I've just been calculating how old you really are. And I understand that, yeah, you're 1 year younger than my daughter, Becky. Well, listen, indirectly, what you and I are doing is for her. So thanks so much for all your support and your interest in Becky's Button. We'll be in touch.
sure.
But if you don't mind me asking, if there is a heaven, she'd be smiling down at us, wouldn't she? Listening to this and smiling. What are your religious beliefs regarding meeting up with loved ones in another world as a Muslim?
That's really touching question. I feel the pain losing a girl or daughter, the only daughter one. In every religion, the concept of a day of judgment is universal, I believe. And significantly, the accountability for one's deed, those who have lived virtually are destined for heaven, and those who have strayed faces the consequences in hell. Similarly, it is believed that dreams reflect of one's state of mind. A peaceful soul experiences serene dreams, while an unsettled one encounter distressing one. So I'm certain that Becky, your daughter, find peace in heaven due to her compassionate work, and with migrant, because you are now ECOS, your own initiative, as you mentioned earlier in our telephonic conversation. So I heard even in your first podcast. So just as your pursuit of justice in Becky's sexual harassment case, potentially preventing similar incidents like Rebecca Dykes, your daughter. So these actions bring peace to our soul, I believe, and I firmly believe. So Rebecca would be undoubtedly be proud of you and observing you from heaven and smiling at you. That what a wonderful mom I have.
Oh, I don't know whether she thought that at the time. But anyway, dear Asma, you must tell me if you have a dream about Becky, right? If she enters your dreams, then whoa, who knows? It's such a mystery, isn't it, all this? But hey, and another thing I haven't mentioned is that you are hoping to do a PhD in Hong Kong. You've applied, and have you, has there been any news about that? Is there anything I can, any way I can help?
Yes, you can help on our telephonic conversation. Even you said, I told you, last night I received a text from the one of the students who applied with me. She said, oh, I'm selected. What about you? I said, let me tell you, Jane, in start, a supervisor was very, I mean, okay with me. I shared my CV. I talked about with her that, are you okay with my that experience, with that knowledge? Because university professors usually think if the person or those candidate can print multiple research paper, that's okay with that. I said, I have ample of experience. I'm focused more on human grooming, especially for societal cause. So let me give a chance. I have published two books. I can do this. So what I need from you is I need your help for reselection for my PhD. If you think that I'm capable enough with that experience, so I think your help will be a vital to me for reselection.
I am more than happy to do anything I can to help you on this. So, for the purposes of this podcast, we'll say bye, and I will be in touch very soon about that
Sure.
good news that at least you've got had, you have engagement with a potential supervisor. Well done, Asma. Fantastic. Wouldn't that be amazing if you're living in Hong Kong soon? Anyway, really better go now. So, thanks again for joining me, and all the very best. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you, Jane. Hopefully soon I'll see you in Hong Kong and join you Becky's cause.
Okay,
Have a good day.
bye.
Bye, Jane. Take care. Bye.
And you. Thanks again for listening to Mending Lives with me, Jane Hong. It was produced by Brian Ho. You can find relevant links to this show in the comments section. I would not, could not be doing this without many people's support and encouragement. So until next time, goodbye.